Okay, well, let's jump right into it. Here we are. We are in chapter three of Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah, of course, means study of Torah. It is Wednesday, the 4th of Sivan, 5783. Just 2 days before the holy day of Shavuot. So how appropriate that we're studying about the beauty of Torah study and the life-changing elements of Torah study, as Rambam will teach us on this day, within the 3 days of preparation for Shavuot, Tishloshet Yimei Hagbalah. Timing is everything. Here we go, chapter 3, Halacha 1, Bishloisha Ksarim Nichtru Yisrael. The Jewish people were crowned with three crowns. What are the three? Keser of Torah, Keser of Kehuna, of priesthood, and Keser of Malchus, and Keser of kingship. Now, if you ask, is Judaism democratic? The answer is yes and no, as we're about to see. Keser Kehuna, to be a Kohen and get the crown of priesthood. Who got that? Aharon. He merited that. Aharon, the brother of Moses, as it says. V'haisalo zarchav bris kunasalam. Torah says, this is a covenant for him, for Aharon, and his descendants after him forever. Joke number 177 is the guy who wanted to become a Kohen. You don't know it? He comes to the rabbi. I need to become a Kohen. Rabbi says, you can't. He says, I'm making $1 million to the donation to the synagogue. The rabbi says, okay, let me talk to the board. He comes back. He says, all right, we're going to do it. After it's all done, the ceremony says, tell me, why are you dying to become a Kohen? He says, my father was a Kohen. My grandfather was a Kohen. I also wanted to be a Kohen. So you have to, it's not a meritocracy. Well, it was initially when Aaron, he merited it, in the words of the Rambam, Zocha Boy Aaron, he merited it. But from that point on, either you got it or you don't. Either you're a descendant of Aaron and you're a Kohen, or you could be as great as Moses, but you ain't no Kohen. You can't become a Kohen, no matter what, nothing you can do to become a Kohen. So it's not a democracy, the priesthood. It's not a meritocracy. It's something you're born with or not. What about kingship? Keser Malchus, the crown of kingship. Zocha by David. King David merited it. Shenemar. Zari lo ilam yeh v'chuzik shemesh negdi. And the Psalms, Psalm 89, that it's going to be forever for his descendants. Keser Toida. So kingship also is not a democratic process. You've got to be a descendant of David to be a king. Yes, we did have other kings, but real kingship in Judaism is kingship of David, and that's what will be in the times of Mashiach. Comes to go the third crown. Keser Toida, the crown of Torah. Here's where you have a democratic crown. The crown of Torah is placed, and it is standing ready for every single Jew to put on that crown. You know, your last name doesn't have to be Cohen, doesn't even have to be Goldberg. You can put on the crown of the Torah. You don't have to be a priest from Aharon. You don't have to be from King David. You can be crowned with the crown of Torah. Shenemar, and how do we know this? Torah was commanded to us by Moses, and it is the inheritance of the congregation of Jacob. Every single Jew, this is the pasuk, the verse that we teach a child from when they're very young. The first verse, this is what we teach them. Every Jew is the inheritor of the Torah. Nobody can tell you the Torah is not for you. It's for this crowd, or this ethnicity, or this tribe. No, every single Jew has equal portion in the Torah. Anybody can rise to the highest levels of Torah knowledge. Kol mi sheyirtze yovavito. Whoever wants, any Jew who wants, can come and take it. And any non-Jew wants it and can convert and also take it. Some of our greatest Torah leaders were converts. Shows, and Rambam pointed it out in his introduction, that he emphasized that these were converts, and my personal interpretation of that is he's showing the democracy of Torah, that this, that it's a meritocracy. If you study it, if you devote your life to it, you could rise to be the greatest leader of Israel. Shema Toimar. Now you might say, well, maybe those crowns that are kind of exclusive, the crown of priesthood, which is only for Aaron, and the crown of kingship, which is only for King David, maybe those are more precious, and that's why they're exclusive. Maybe they're greater. Says the Rambam, no. How do you aimer? Be melachim imloichu, v'reiznim yecheike gutzedek, b'sarim yesheidu. The Rambam quotes from Proverbs that it's actually Torah that gives priesthood and gives kingship its greatness. So which is greater? Obviously the Torah, because the Torah is the one, by me kings reign, princes decree justice and nobles rule. By who's by me? By me, the Torah. The Torah is what institutes who's going to be the king and who's going to be the Kohen. So clearly the crown of Torah rises above the other two crowns. Halamadito, Shekeser Getoira, Godel Mishneim. Keser, crown of Torah, is greater than both of them. Halacha 2. Amru Chachamim, the sages said, Mamzer Talmid Chacham, Koidim Lekoin Gadoi Lama Aretz. Going along on the same idea, that let's say you have a Kohen Gadol, he's the high priest, and he is not knowledgeable of Torah, he's an Am Haaretz. And then you have a Talmud Chacham, someone who has devoted his life to Torah study, but he's a Mamzer. Mamzer is a person who was born from an illicit relationship. So that child is called a Mamzer. Says the Rambam, that this Mamzer, who is a Talmud Chacham, who is a scholar of Torah, who's devoted his life to Torah, he takes precedence over the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest, who is an Amaretz, who is ignorant, as it says in Mishle, again, according from Proverbs, Yikora hi mipnimi ninim, that the Torah is more precious than pearls. But our sages explained, it's not talking about pearls, because obviously the Torah is more precious than pearls. That's like saying that gold is more precious than paper. Yeah, I mean, it's not in the same realm. Pearls are not in the same realm of Torah. So our sages explained, what does it mean, mipninim, which literally means pearls? Sages explained, mipninim also has the word pnim, which means inside. So what the Proverbs is saying is that the Torah is more precious than the Kohen Gadol, who goes into the inside, lefnai v'lefnim, of the Holy of Holies. But if you have a person who was great in Torah, he is more precious than the Kohen Gadol, if the Kohen Gadol is not a Torah scholar himself. Halacha 3, Ein lecha mitzvah gedoyla, Ein lecha mitzvah b'chala mitzvah skulon shishkulon k'neged Talmud Torah. There is no mitzvah among all the 613 mitzvahs that is equal to the mitzvah of study of Torah. But the study of Torah is equal to all the mitzvahs. Why? Because Talmud, because study is the engine that brings you to do all of the mitzvahs. Therefore, study takes precedence over deed in all cases. Now the Rambam will get into a little bit more detail. Number four, halacha four, ha'yilafon avasiyas mitzvah talmud Torah. Let's say you have in front of you the opportunity to either do a mitzvah or to study Torah. What should you do? Imef shalom mitzvah le'asadiyachinim. So you got to think about it. Can somebody else do this mitzvah? If someone else can do it, then keep studying. As he said before, Torah study takes precedence over the deed. V'im lav, but if there's nobody else to do the mitzvah, then yase ha-mitzvah v'yase le-talmudi. Then go and do the mitzvah and return to your Torah study. Number five, tchilas dinei shel adam einei nidin ela la-talmud. The first aspect of a person's judgment in the world to come will be about his Torah study. V'acha kach hasha ma'aseh, and then afterwards, his other deeds will be considered. Therefore, our sages said that a person should always be occupied with the study of Torah, whether he's doing it for the right reasons, to serve God, bein lishma, bein shelo lishma, whether he's doing it for some ulterior motive. you should always be studying Torah, and even if it's not for the highest reasons. The Rambam doesn't get into why, but it's explained, the Alter Rebbe explains in Hilchos Talmud Torah and in other sources in the Tanya, that when you study Torah, even if it's not for the perfect reason of connecting with God, eventually, when you do teshuvah, all the Torah study that you did, even for ulterior motive, it's going to be elevated when you do teshuvah, when you repent. Also, there's this idea that the ma'or shaba machzira lemutav, that there is something in the Torah, there's like a light in the Torah that even when you're ingesting it, not without the proper intentions, but you've ingested it, and so it's going to have an impact on you eventually, either in this life or maybe in another life. Hopefully in this life. Number six. So Rambam is saying, even if you have you want to study Torah because you want to be respected or because you think it's going to bring you some kind of good luck, go ahead. Study for the wrong reason. That's fine. As long as you study. It says in the Jerusalem Talmud that God says, halavai, if only they would abandon me, but keep my Torah, keep studying my Torah. Because by studying the Torah, it'll eventually bring us back to God. Number six, Mishan Asayli Beilakai Mitzvah Zekirol, Yivalichs Mukhtab Chesed Torah. Now the Rambam says, if you want to really do this mitzvah properly, and you want to be crowned with the crown of Torah, Lo Yasiach Daita L'Dvarim Achirim. Ah, this is a tall order. This is not a comfortable, you sit on your armchair, you go and have your bagel, and then you come and you study a little Torah. No. This is a serious thing, like going through medical school, but it's not just 8 years, it's your whole life. This is like training for a race for the Olympics, but it's your whole life. Lo yasiach daitel dvar machedim. Don't allow your mind to be distracted by other things. Don't think, oh, I'm going to study Torah, and I'm going to get wealthy, and I'm going to have honor. No. Kachi darka shel Torah, the way of Torah is, pas melech torcha, you have to be ready to eat bread with salt. That's it. No sushi. Umayim b'mesura tishte, and just have water in small measure. No smoothies. V'aloretz tishan, and you're sleeping on the floor. No Egyptian cotton mattresses. V'chay yitzar tichye, and you live a life of, what does he say? Difficulty. V'atoyra ta'omel. And you're focused on Torah study. This is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Mishnah in Ethics of the Fathers. The way the Chida explains it is that it's not that you have to do these things, just eat bread and so forth. You have to be dedicated to the Torah to such an extent that this is all you need, because the Torah is giving you your luxury, is giving you your pleasure, is giving you your delight, that you don't need any of the physical pleasures of the world. That's the type of dedication to Torah that really the Rambam is talking about, for which you can say you've got the crown of Torah and all the benefits, the spiritual benefits, material benefits as well, of becoming one with Torah. Here the Rambam says, I know I scared you, and this is a tall order, and there's a lot to learn. Don't be scared. It's not upon you, it's not your, it's also from Pirkei Avos, it's not your obligation to finish the matter, to complete it, to get to the top. You have to strive for it. You're not free to desist from it. You got to go. Don't be discouraged if you haven't reached the top. Your job is to work towards it. The more Torah you study, the more reward you've created for yourself. And according to the difficulty and the investment, that is the reward that you will take out. Welcome, welcome. Good to see everybody. Oh, there we go. Number seven. Shema Toimar Ache Kabitz Mamoy. Now the Rambam talks about timing. See, we have a bunch of questions in the chat. Okay, we got a lot of going on in the chat. That's good. Hashem. I'm not good at multitasking, so we keep going. Number seven, Shema Toimar, a person might say, Acha Kabitz Momoin, Echsev Ekra. First, I'm going to make a lot of money. And then I'll go back and I'll return it into Torah study. I'll buy what I need. Then I'll retire. And I'm going to go and study Torah. If this is your way of thinking, you will never merit the crown of Torah. Rather, I say to Rosh Hakeva, you make Torah study your primary thing, and your work secondary. Don't say, when I'll be free, that's when I'll study. Because perhaps you will never be free. In Shabbos, I mentioned a great teaching. There was this connected with Shavuos. There was a rabbi in the Talmud. His name is Rav Yosef. And Rav Yosef said every Shavuos he would throw a party and he would serve a fancy meal. And he would say, Ilav hai yoima de kagorim kama Yosef ike b'shuka. If not for this day, Shavuos, when the Torah was given, there would be many Yosefs in the marketplace. And I would be like one of them. I wouldn't be Rav Yosef, person who studies Torah, and so on and so forth. And there was an interpretation of that, which was not just, if not for this day, Shavuos, Ilav Hai Yoima of Shavuos. He says that Rabbi Yosef was a person who looked at every single day as the day to study Torah. In other words, he could have the attitude, I'll study tomorrow, I'm tired today, I'm busy today. Rav Yosef, the reason that he became who he became was because he says, Hai Yoima, this is the day I'm going to study Torah. Every single day is always the day to study Torah. That's who he became, who he became. Numero 8, Kosuv Beteira, it says in the Torah, Deuteronomy, Lo yibashamayim hihi lehimoir. It's not in the heavens that you should say, I'm going to go up to the heaven. Can I go up to the heavens? V'loi mi eiver layomhi. Nor is it across the sea. So the simple meaning is, Moshe is saying over there that the Torah is accessible to you. Ki korov elecho hadavar me'oid l'ficho v'vavcha l'aseisei. The Torah is close to you. But there's a rabbinic interpretation of this that Rambam cites, which is that the Torah cannot be found in heaven, meaning it cannot be found amongst those who are arrogant, who are haughty. V'loi b'mahal chimei v'layamhi, nor can it be found of people who are traveling across the sea for business. Therefore, a sage has said, loi kolamar b'schoida machkim, that somebody whose mind is occupied with business all the time, he's not going to become wise in Torah. You should minimize your business activities and occupy yourself with Torah. In the olden days, back in the shtetl, you had such people. They would have a store. And as soon as they made enough money that they needed for that day, they would close the shop and go to the Beis Medrash, the shul, to study Torah. It wasn't a thing that you make money for the sake of making money and more money and so forth and so forth. Rather, their dedication was to Torah study, and their career, their job was merely to make enough money for them to be able to live and to support their families. Tes divrei toiro nimshlu kamayim. The words of Torah are compared to water. As it is written in Isaiah, hoy kol tzame luchu lamayim. Behold, anyone who is thirsty, come to the water. What's the water? Water is Torah. Loy melecha mamayim enem iskansim mekwe midim. Why is Torah compared to water? So he says, just as water does not collect on an incline, b'mekoyim midroin, elon is cholin me'olov, miskapsim me'okim ashpoiden, is going to flow down the incline and gather in a place, a lowly place. Kach divrei Torah, same thing with Torah, it cannot be found among those who are haughty, v'loy b'lev kol gvalev, nor in the heart of somebody who is arrogant, ela bedaku shvaruach, a person who has humility, shemis abik vafaragli hachomim, person who is willing to get dusty at the dirt on the floor of the feet of the sages, umesir hatayves, and removes the desires Matanugi Azman Miliboy, and the luxuries of the time, the delights of the time, from his heart. And he ma'at kidei chayav, he does enough work, just a little, enough to support himself. So if he doesn't have what to eat, shar yomei, the rest of his day and the rest of his night, oisik batoira, that's where the Torah is found. Just so that's the metaphor of water. Just as water flows into a lowly place and that's where it settles, the Torah will flow and settle into a person who has opened himself up to Torah. As we say, there's a clay mole eini machzik, a vessel that's already full cannot contain anything more. And so what seems to Rambam is describing a person who is an empty vessel. He hasn't filled it with material ambitions and material pursuits and is thus open with the humility to receive and internalize the Torah. Number 10, Yud. Kol ha-meisim libe shi'asik batoido v'li'asim locho v'isparnis min ha-sagar z'chilashim. Oh, here you have the Rambam saying something very, very strong. He says, somebody who wakes up in the morning at the beginning of his career and says, you know what, I'm going to study Torah and that's how I'm going to earn a living. I'm not going to work. I'm going to be fed off of charity. Says the Rambam, this is a person who desecrates the name of God. Ubiza satoiro, and he shames the Torah. He demeans the Torah. He dishonors the Torah. And he extinguishes the light of the faith. And he causes evil to himself. And he takes his life from the world to come. Why? It's forbidden to benefit from the words of Torah, from Torah in this world. Our sages said in Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers, anybody who derives a benefit from Torah, material benefit from the Torah, removes his life from the world. Our sages also said in Ethics of the Fathers and Pirkei Avot, Al tasem atorah lisgadlben, don't turn the Torah into a crown for you to magnify yourself, nor an axe to chop with. In other words, to use your status as a Torah person to gain some material thing. There's a story it's cited in the Pirkei Avos commentaries. I included it in my commentary on the Pirkei Avos, that's how I know it, is that Rabbi Tarfon was a great, one of the great sages. He was also very wealthy, and he had many fields and many employees that worked for him. And once he was eating from one of his trees. He was eating a fruit from one of his trees, and the employees, because he had such, they didn't know him. They didn't recognize him. They didn't know he was the owner. So they started to attack him because he thought he was a thief stealing from the fruits of his own tree. And he didn't want to say, "I am Rabbi Tarfon," because he felt and identify himself, so they would leave him alone, because he didn't want to use the fact that he is a rabbi as a means to gain anything, any material benefit. That's the extent to which Rabbi Tarfon and the sages didn't want to use their status and their Torah study for any material benefit. If it was for a spiritual benefit or to benefit the community, then they would say, hey, I'm Rabbi Tarfon, you got to listen to me if it was something important for the community to learn or to do. But for their own material benefit, they wouldn't use the rabbi card. You saw that the sages were very tough, and they were very assertive and very confident when it came to some spiritual cause, to serving the community, to serving God, to serving the Torah. But when it came to their personal material matters, they were humble and would not use their status as rabbis to benefit themselves. They also said, love work and despise lording over others. Here he translates as rabbinic positions, but rabbanut literally is to lord over others. V'chol toira she'inima melacha, any, it's also Pirkei Avos, any Torah that is not accompanied with work, in the end, it will become nullified. It will eventually be negated, and it will lead to sin. Such a person who makes this cheshbon of, I'm not going to work, I'm just going to study Torah and live off charity, such a person is, in the end, will steal from others. Let's do one more a law on this, and then I'll talk a little bit about this, because it's a complicated issue. Personal, it gets a little personal too, because I happen to be a rabbi, get a salary for that, so how does that work? So forth. Number 11. There's a very tremendous advantage for a person to derive his livelihood from his own, the work of his hands. Maise yodov, the work of his hands, from his own efforts. It is the way of the early pious ones. And the sages of the Mishnah, one of them was a blacksmith. There was a sage who was, and Rambam also quoted him in the introduction to the Rambam, where he went through the 40 generations. Rabbi Yochanan Hasandler, the one who was the shoemaker. So they're the greatest sages who we quote to this day, but they earn their money from the work of their hands, manual labor. Or like Rabbi Tarfon, who owned property and was a business person. And through this, through not having to receive any grants from others or getting paid for being a rabbi, you won merits, all the honor and good of this world and of the world to come. As it says, the work of your hands, when you will eat that, ashrecha, you are fortunate. It is good for you. You are fortunate in this world. It's good for you in the world to come. Let's now take a quick pause. We just read two halachot of the Rambam. The first one, he goes very, very sharp. He says, anybody who does this, he's a desecrator of God's name. In 11, he seems to be talking about the same thing, but he says it a lot softer. And he says there is a great advantage to making a living through your work. And that's the way of Hasidim. So what's going on over here? It seems like a big contrast. And so the commentaries explain, and there's different explanations of it. But one of the explanations is that, as I kind of mentioned in Halacha 10, he's talking about a person who sets out from the beginning that I'm going to study Torah for the sake of it being a living to live off the charity of, oh, I study Torah, now they have to give me charity and take care of me. That is a desecration of God's name. There is another methodology, which is that a person studies Torah for the sake of studying Torah. Now that he knows Torah, and he can go into become a doctor, he can become a plumber, he can become a CPA, or he can become a teacher of Torah and get paid for that. He says that is not a desecration of God's name. He's working. But he still says there's something to be said, there's something very special about a person who doesn't make any money from the fact of his Torah. He gets his living from a mundane type of work. It's interesting, when the Rebbe first came to America, what did he do? He was working in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, checking over the wiring, electrical engineering. The Rebbe was fulfilling this law of the Rambam. Eventually, the Rebbe was convinced that he was needed most in the realm of spirituality. That's how he could best serve the Jewish people. And so I think that, you know, throughout history, there have been different approaches to this, whether to get paid for being involved in Torah and so on and so forth. And the ultimate answer to it, I think, is as follows. Interesting. We had it earlier in the Rambam when he was talking about the sanctity of God's name, the difference between a prefix and a suffix, right? If it's a prefix to God's name, it doesn't have holiness. The suffix to God's name has holiness. And so I thought metaphorically to say that it all depends on where you put yourself vis-a-vis God. If you put yourself before God, first comes me, and then God is second in the picture, then you don't attain the holiness of God. It doesn't spread to you. you remain who you are. But if you put yourself after God, if you put God first and you're second, so what does God need in this world? What is needed of me from God? You put myself second. Then, like we say, the servant of the king is also like a king. He attains the status and the honor of the palace. So the bottom line of it is, how is the Jewish people best served? That is the approach that the sages took. So there were some times where it's better that the sages were engaged in this material work and not receiving any funding from their Torah knowledge. That was appropriate for that time. And there are times when that's not appropriate. We need the rabbis to be fully engaged in being rabbis and teaching, and it's not servicing the Jewish people to have the rabbis being a blacksmith. And so that's the ultimate, I think, the answer is. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, what is best for the Jewish people? You saw that with the Rebbe as well, when people wanted to move to Israel. People who are professors in colleges, for example, I want to leave it all and move to Israel and just study Torah. They would say no. They were told by other rabbis, wow, that's the biggest mitzvah you could do. You're going to go straight to heaven when you get to the next world. The Rebbe said no. Where are the Jewish people best served? How are the Jewish people best served? By you moving to Israel and studying Torah, or staying in that college in San Diego as a religious Jew, and every student, Jewish student that comes through your class sees, oh wow, you can be a professor and be a religious Jew. The Jewish people are best served by you staying over there and not moving to Jerusalem. So that's the bottom line, I think, how we understand this. Number 12 and 13, I better get moving over here because we're already at a half an hour. Number 12, and Torah will not be permanently acquired by a person who applies himself feebly to obtain them. Not by a person who is going to study Torah while amid pleasure and abundance of food and drink. How do you acquire Torah? This kind of be said similar things before. If you are giving your life for it and straining your body to the point of discomfort, or at least willing to do so, and not giving sleep to your eyes or slumber to your eyelids. Now, you do have to be well rested to study Torah. Amru chachamim derech remez, our sages said, by way of a hint, this is the Torah. Who acquires the Torah? The person who is willing to die in the tent, not physically, not literally die, but to give up the physical world. And Shlomo said in his wisdom, he said, peace be imtzara tzarkechecha, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. And he also said, af chachmasi amdali, the chachma, the wisdom that I learned, ba'af, in times of adversity, that is what remained for me. Also, our sages said, there is a covenant that anybody who toils in Torah in the Beit HaMidrash, in the study hall, lo b'meirim shkech, he will not forget that Torah soon. He won't soon forget it. And anybody who toils in Torah bitzina, privately, machkim, becomes wise. As it says, Vesnun Chachma. Also, so Rambam is giving us all kinds of hints. You know, in other words, you can study Torah, but it can go in one ear and go out the other. How do we study Torah in a way that we absorb it, that we internalize it, that we don't forget it? Says, if you learn with your voice, you don't just read it with your eyes, like you're in a library, but rather like they do in yeshiva, where there's a lot of noise. That actually helps you to remember what you studied better than simply reading it visually. And even if you read it, but you're reading it quietly, you're going to forget it quickly. So when you study Torah, use your voice and learn out loud. Number 13, even though it's a mitzvah to learn by day and by night, a person learns most of his wisdom at night. Therefore, somebody who wants to merit the crown of the Torah, you should be careful of all of his nights. He shouldn't miss out even one night with just sleeping and eating and drinking and schmoozing. Rather with Torah and words of Chochmah, words of wisdom. Our sages said that the song of Torah can be heard only at night, as it says, Kumi roini balaila, arise, sing out at night. Kumi roini balaila, Anybody who studies Torah at night, there is a thread of kindness that is extended over him during the day. As it says in the Psalms, and any home that doesn't have that words of Torah are not heard in it at night is consumed by, metaphorically, by fire. What does that mean? Metaphorically, if there isn't the inspiration and wisdom of Torah in the home, then that can create problems in the home, spiritual fire. And what does it mean that a person who has scorned the word of God? This is a person who pays no attention to Torah at all. A person who has the capacity to occupy himself with Torah and doesn't occupy himself, or he learned Torah. Study both the written and oral Torah and turned away to the vanities of the world. He left it. That's included in scorning the word of God. Our sages said, anybody who ceases, neglects Torah study from a state of wealth, in the end, he will neglect it from a state of poverty. And anyone who fulfills the Torah in a state of poverty, in the end, will fulfill it in a state of wealth. I'll get back to that at the end. This actually says straight in the Torah, as the Torah says, that in the warnings that it gives at the end of Deuteronomy, that the reason these things will happen is because a person has not served God with joy and good feeling, because there was an abundance of everything. So that ultimately he will make you prosper. That concludes the Rambam of today, chapter 3 of Laws of Torah. I want to get back to this thing where it says that anybody who studies Torah out of poverty will in the end fulfill the Torah out of wealth. The commentators there on Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers, they say, last we checked, a lot of people who were studying Torah out of poverty, and they remain poor. And a lot of people who neglected Torah study out of wealth, and they remain wealthy. So what does the Mishnah mean by this? So there are many different interpretations, and I'll share one of them. I forget who says this interpretation, but this idea that wealth and poverty is also in the mind, right? There's a when you study Torah out of poverty, that means you're studying Torah without the spiritual appreciation of it, the richness of it. But you push yourself and you continue to study the Torah. The Mishnah is promising that eventually you will study the Torah out of wealth, you will appreciate the richness of it. The truth is that is true of all of us, because even as rich as it is in the way we study Torah during the exile, compared to how we will study the Torah in the time of Mashiach, it can be considered studying Torah out of poverty, because we don't understand, we don't really have it in full color and surround sound. So it's like throughout the exile, we are studying the Torah out of poverty. We don't have the ultimate appreciation of it, but there's a promise that when Mashiach comes, we're going to study that same Torah. Me'oisher. We'll now open it up to questions and or comments. Most Jews are supposed to work. It's an aberration that we have today, especially in Israel, that most of a community are studying Torah. That was never done before in Jewish history. It was always a minority of the community that was fully immersed in Torah. If everyone can afford to be immersed in Torah, okay, fine. That's what the Rambam is describing is basically whatever free moment you have, that you should be studying Torah. Now, is that practical for everyone? Can some people go crazy from that and they need to have a break? They need to have some kind of a hobby. They need to engage in something. Yes, that's fine. But the goal, the aspiration has to be, I want to study Torah as much as I can. It could be physically impossible for some people, mentally, emotionally, psychologically. They need a break. They need to go and take a walk around the block. They need to engage in some other activity. They can't. But the goal, the aspiration is, if I have a free moment, I'm going to study Torah. So for some people, let's say a person is retired, or let's say a person is young and he's still living in his parent off his parents are paying the bills, and he doesn't need to earn a living, so he's really should be studying Torah as much as he can at every moment. Once a person needs to make a living, and he just has, you know, an hour in the morning and an hour at night, or even 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes at night, if it really is. Job is so all-consuming, then whatever he studies in the time that he has is just as great as all the Torah study that the person who has all day has. In fact, the one who has all day and doesn't utilize it completely can be at a lower level than the person who only has 5 minutes, but he uses those 5 minutes. The main thing is, as the Rebbe said many times, something called kviyas itim, that you set a time. This is a time I'm going to study Torah. The phone is off. Nobody can bother me. Used to say the president of the United States can call and I ignore it. Today, that's not such a big statement. But do not listen to your phone or your email during this time that you have studied Torah. Of course, if you're an emergency doctor working in the emergency room, you have to have your beeper on. But if you're a software engineer, software engineers also have emergencies. The whole server is going to go down. It's not, if it's not an emergency, leave it alone. Commit to that time. That's one thing. Kviyas itim l'Torah. The time that you set aside for Torah, stick to it. And during that time, don't interrupt. Unless your wife calls. And one more thing. The Rebbe would say kviyas itim, but also kviyas in zman. So you're setting the time as being permanent, but also kviyas benefesh. That when you're studying, that's the whole world. If you only have 5 minutes to study during the day, during those 5 minutes, there's nothing else exists. You're fully immersed in the Torah. And in that way, someone who does that could be at a higher level than a person who's studying all day, but he's not fully immersed in it.
Those words I appreciate. Thank you. That makes a massive difference.
Well, thank you for asking it and helping to clarify it. Practically speaking, what is Torah study? That could be the 24 books of the Torah. It could be Chumash, it could be Navi, it could be Prophets, it could be Talmud, it could be Jewish Law, it could be Musar, it could be Hasidus, it could be Kabbalah, any authentic Torah text. If you read Eli Wiesel's books, I don't know if that would be considered Torah study. Certainly, if you read Bernard Malamud, or just because it's a Jewish author doesn't make it a Torah book. But if it's a Torah book, it's discussing Torah, discussing Jewish law, discussing Jewish philosophy, discussing Jewish Torah verses, then that is Torah study.
Probably once you gave us a talk and... you said keep a book or Sidur or Tanakh nearby, and anytime you have a free moment, you can read, you can study. This was great advice.
Thank you. Yeah, you hear about many people in the business world that they do the Rambam daily, even the three chapters daily. They they find the time on the subway on the way to work. They do their daily Torah study. If you're dedicated to something, you find the time to do it. I remember seeing here in Burlingame a taxi driver, a limousine driver, I should say. He was waiting for his client. Client was inside for a while. And this is a Jewish guy, an Israeli guy. And what was he doing while he was waiting? He was reading Torah. He was reading Torah. Effie Sharabi. So that's exactly it. Could be listening to the radio. He could be schmoozing with his pals. He has a free moment. He's not driving. He's waiting. Pulls out a Torah. And was the old way. You would see the shopkeeper in his shop, in between customers. He has a book with him. He has a Torah book. But I'm glad, Charles, you help us clarify it. That, and as the Rambam himself says, this is not to say that you should never come to a state of poverty because of this, and then become a ward of the community. That is a desecration of God's name. So that's certainly not the Rambam's intention, that a person should become a burden on society. To the contrary, the Rambam says that would be a desecration of God's name. A person has to do what they have to do to support themselves while having this dedication to Torah study. Any other question or comment before we sign off for tonight? All right. Well, I wish everybody a happy and healthy Shavuos. May you receive the Torah with simcha, with joy, and bepnimius, and internalize it, and may your cheesecake be delicious. Laila Tov, good Yom Tif, and we'll see you on the other side.